Hello, everyone. Well, what day is today? Seems to be about midnight or so on the 20th of July. And this is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology 128A. We're on page 509, and we're going to get into some quite practical information, I think. We've been dealing with the way that various planets are associated with various houses, and whether these houses are to be considered esoteric or exoteric or both. The houses associated with the sacred, non-sacred planets are generally considered to be exoteric, and we're trying to find the house that is associated particularly with the Earth, looking at probably the sixth house or perhaps the second house, and the same for Vulcan. The way I have it assigned at the moment is the second house for Vulcan and the sixth house for the Earth, considering the Earth as the virgin of matter. And we're all looking forward to what is called the Assumption of the Virgin, or that higher, that raising of the quality of matter, raising matter to heaven. So we are getting into an area now where DK tells us that it is not my intention to deal with the houses in detail. Modern astrologers have worked this out relatively satisfactorily, and I would say that a bridging astrologer like Thane Rudyar has done a lot to bring a more spiritual, psychological, even esoteric interpretation to the houses. Well, the houses concern the prison of the soul, and its limitations, and with these there is widespread familiarity. The life of matter form, not just on the dense physical plane, but also in other areas which are within the personality. Prison implies the inability to escape into greater fields of consciousness and energy expression. So although there are some very, very concrete meanings to the houses, they can be spiraled up to include higher aspects of the personality and, to a certain extent, the soul life, which, interestingly, is still, in a way, within the form, because it's part of the 21 lower subplanes, and we know that those 21 are part of the physical body of the solar logos. As you know, I am concerned with the astrology of the soul and with the influences of the esoteric planets. And as I've been trying to say, are we dealing with the astrology of the soul on its own plane, or are we dealing with the way in which the soul force can make its impact within the personality and the individual become a soul-infused personality? Three suggestions I will, however, make, and then he goes on for even more. If the investigating astrologer will substitute the esoteric planets for the orthodox exoteric planets, and I have indicated these in connection with the signs of the zodiac, he will get much instructive information. And if he perseveres, the verification of my ideas. I know that it is so, let's say, in my own chart, which is the Sun in Aries, and I could, of course, simply study Mars, which has its validity, but it is rather absorbed by an elevated Mercury, also in Aries, which is the esoteric ruler, and which has rather conditioned my writing and speaking approach to the ageless wisdom. So the esoteric ruler of Aries is very meaningful to me. I could also say, well, with a Cancer rising sign, the moon, which is conjunct Mars in Aquarius, would be the main thing. But I have discovered that Neptune, which has led into a life of a music and a drama and a barely concealed mysticism opposing Mercury, is very active and significant in my Cancerian approach to life. And I'm sure all of you, you know, many of you, you've studied esoteric astrology and you've tried to interpret your sun sign and rising sign from the perspective of the esoteric rulers and have found that your spiritual life is very much governed thereby. So increasingly, astrologers how about spelling that are doing this, especially among the avant-garde. If he will distinguish between the effects of the sacred planets and the non-sacred planets, he will discover that the sacred planets endeavor to fuse the personality and make it the instrument of the soul. So the factor of integration, the sacred planets work within the soul towards integration, and then they work at the integration of the personality and the soul. These planets work towards integrating the personality per se, and also towards fusing the personality and the soul. So the fusion formulas should be correlated with esoteric rulers. And then we would discover the major ways to take our soul ray and its fusion formula indications and blend it with, let us say, the esoteric rulers of the rising sign and the sun sign. And the non-sacred planets influence more specifically the form nature. More so, more so than the consciousness nature. Much light on the pull between the pairs of opposites may then pour in. So the pairs of opposites, for practical purposes, are the soul and the personality. And if we look at the aspects between the sacred planets. No. I know it's there. Sacred planets and the non-sacred planets, we will find the ways in which these opposites are contesting. For instance, if people have a square between Mars and Venus, obviously Venus is the sacred planet in this particular instance, and Mars represents the personality. It's a very good dramatization of soul and personality, either in opposition or square. And we could see what kinds of tendencies, according to the sign, will and house or arm, will bring about the establishment of the soul regime compared to the re-emphasis of the personality regime. And maybe we can feel the dynamics of this pull in our own contest as we observe the soul and personality at war or attempting to cooperate and somehow harmonize. If he will study the fluid area where the planets veiled by the sun and moon come into play, and fluidity can mean change, even in the course of a lifetime. So at different times, the emphasis may be on one or other of the vehicles which the veiled planets represent. Veiled by the Sun and the Moon, and they are largely Vulcan, Neptune, Uranus, which stand for the three aspects of the personality, physical, astral, mental, and will realize that he must decide from a study of the chart of the subject and any knowledge he may have. Let's not dismiss that. Sometimes people feel they have to get it all from astrology, but it's just fine to ask questions that fill in the blanks. So, from a study of the chart of the and any knowledge he may have, he must decide what is the point in evolution reached, and which of the three veiled planets is the ruler. He will get much intuitive understanding. According to the point in evolution reached, generically we might say that with the Moon, Vulcan is veiled for the undeveloped. For the more emotionally polarized, Neptune is veiled, and for the more mentally focused, I won't yet say polarized, Uranus is the focus. He will find himself able to throw much light upon the problem of the probationary disciple when considering the exoteric rulers, and upon the problems of disciples when dealing with the esoteric rulers. Well, the probationary disciple is still on the mutable cross, not having taken the first initiation. Probationary disciple still on the mutable cross. So, and we are dealing all the time with many probationary disciples, so we should not jump to the esoteric rulers and exclude entirely the exoteric rulers. Perhaps for some people in transition, both have to be understood. There may be a movement from response according to the exoteric rulers and response according to the esoteric rulers. So sometimes the question of whether the, let's say, the Sun in Leo is simply the Sun in Leo, or veiling Neptune, or veiling Uranus, is an important one and depends upon the degree of evolution of the individual. And sometimes the planet veiled by the Moon is determined by the degree of evolutionary unfoldment, but sometimes it really has much to do with the sign in which the Moon finds itself. If it finds itself in Taurus or Virgo, there may be a strong connection with Vulcan. And if in Virgo, Vulcan and Neptune may be veiled. And if in Aquarius, there may be a veil of all the three, and the need to integrate them, as that hierarchical ruler speaks to the possibility of bringing the vehicles into a condition of transfiguration. But it is fluid, and because it's fluid, it is Neptunian, and because it is Neptunian, it is related to the intuition and the Buddhic plane. So, applying our knowledge, applying reason, and then attempting to decide on the basis of that which is known may evoke the intuition, and a clear example will be found. In the case of most advanced people who are mentally focused, I won't yet say polarized, because that is an issue that unfolds or is dealt with between the second and third initiation, and maybe not so many are at that place yet. In this condition, Uranus will generally be the veiled ruler of the moon. But as I say, when you have the moon in Cancer, it might be Uranus, but there's a very strong gravitation towards Neptune, just as in Taurus, a strong gravitation towards Vulcan. And perhaps if in Aquarius, a strong gravitation towards Uranus, regardless of the stage of evolution at which the individual finds himself. It all has to do with whether he is physically, etherically focused, emotionally focused, or mentally focused. And that, if we can determine, whether the individual is physically, emotionally, or mentally focused, it may tell us much about which planet is veiled by the moon. We should not just read the moon as the moon. We should go to the chart and say, what would the implications be if, in addition to the moon position, that position were held by another Uranus or another Neptune, or perhaps by Vulcan? If the astrologer will consider these three points and will be willing to experiment with them, a Uranian word having much to do with astrology, that planet which has much to do with astrology, though Charles Jayne, my teacher of this subject at one time, felt that both Neptune and Saturn should be almost equally considered as ruling astrology, the three synthesizing planets, all of them. So be willing to experiment with them, a great stride forward into the unveiling of the astrology of the soul will take place. And that is, after all, what we are interested in, unveiling a new astrology which will help us understand the inner spiritual reality we call the soul, and which is really the center of life for a person who is striving spiritually and attempting to live according to the higher energies as they express themselves in the personality. There is a duality, a realized duality. This comes in with Gemini and Virgo. And he wants to place the emphasis upon the higher of the pairs of opposites and needs to know how to do that. He will find it useful also to work out the higher correspondences to the material realities for which the houses stand. You know, it's almost as if I never have seen that. It's something that Nicholas and I have been doing for a long time. We have done this in some degree of completion, and when I get to the, I have to kind of promise myself this, to the meaning of the houses, I think it would be good to discuss some of these higher correspondences. I'll have to remember that. You know, sometimes I call upon my own material, as in the case of the decanates, trying to elaborate the different stages through which the person might pass. I tried to do this for the classes that I was teaching, and also trying to affirm my belief that you can be born, you can be at any particular stage of evolution and be born in any decanate, even though certain of the decanates may have more resonance with the stage of evolution at which you find yourself. So anyway, for instance, he says, I will give you some idea of these correspondences in connection with the first two houses. So the first house, the physical body or form, or the causal body of the soul, higher correspondence, right? Probably we would not find the monadic vehicle there. I wonder what kind of chart we would have to reveal the condition of that vehicle. The first house, appearance or manifestation, or the emergence of the soul. Well, appearance of the form, or the emergence or appearance of the soul. The head, the brain, or the head center. You can always substitute a chakra, can't you? Personal activity and soul expression. We were just reading about Aries, Mars, and the sixth ray, and the kind of activity we can expect from the first house. Dane Rudyard made much of the first house as looking at it as the seed of the true, or somehow the true structure of the name of the individual, the inner pattern of the individual, before it had become conditioned by circumstance. So kind of an archetypal pattern of individual expression or soul expression to be brought forward, very Uranian in that respect. And of course, from a certain perspective, Aries is ruled by Uranus, the hierarchical ruler. Mannerisms, etc., the kinds of things which are habitual and noticed in the individual, and then also ray types and qualities, which are the higher correspondence. And then when it comes to the second house, we have finances and monetary interchange. That's the very concrete aspect. But prana is wealth. You know, we spend our health to gain our wealth. We spend our wealth to regain our health. And it doesn't always work. The prana is this flowing golden substance, as it has been called, and one who is rich in prana has ongoing life. When the prana leaves, the breath stops and the body dies and the inner man abstracts to a higher plane. Expenditures, how do we use our energy? Possessions, our form is the great possession. So how do we control the form, just as how do we tend our possessions? Losses, well, this is also reflected in the eighth house, and we could say withdrawal from matter. There is kind of an eighth house correspondence here as well. But gain and loss are found here. Acquisition of spiritual powers and spiritual qualities as found within the causal body. Well, what I'm seeing here is that this little section came up on me faster than I thought. So maybe I can find one of the documents that has been used in the past and which is useful in this respect. Now, what I have here is a couple of documents that I have used. I always think that the one that is really the magical one is missing somewhere. But looking at house number one, the traditional view, the physical body, its form, physical appearance, activities of the personality, and the mannerisms go there, characteristics of the ego, the lower ego, the brain, the head, the lower ego in action, and urge for personal space or dominance in the environment, you know, imposing one's own nature in a Martian-like way upon the environment. That's the traditional way. From the personality point of view, the establishment of personal identity, we have Aries and Mars. Psychologically, self-representation, the truest identity. Sometimes the idea of the mask is brought forward in traditional astrology, the mask which is shown to the world, the ability to really know oneself in a deep way, one's personal style, and with this come the, maybe I can see, what size is that? Looks like a 12. So maybe I can add a little bit to this, perhaps in this color. The mannerisms are here found. Those distinguishing habits which make a person distinct. Now, the brain and the head were mentioned. Every zodiacal sign rules an aspect of the physical body, But here, the esoteric interpretation, we have more the soul body or the causal lotus. The egoic lotus is found both in connection with house number one and with house number five. I think the unique identity of the lotus is emphasized in house number one, and the more the talents and qualities which are stored and the radiance and expression of those is emphasized more in house number five. The aura or radiation, the emergence of soul purpose according to the rising sign at a particular, in a particular life, the qualities of the ray type, some of these DK has said, the head centers are chakras, I suppose all of the head chakras, there are seven within the head, they are connected with Vulcan, also with the Great Bear, and there is a connection with Aries, Vulcan, and the Great Bear. We have seen that connection with Aries and the Great Bear, also with Libra in that case, Libra leading to Shambhala, which is the head center. So the expression of manifested will, the activities of the soul, as it expresses itself, asserts itself, we might say, activities of the soul as it asserts itself. And from one perspective, the mental body, which is the first extension of the soul body, it can be, first house can represent both the causal body and the mental body. Let's see if there's anything different in this one. No, this is pretty much the same. Pretty much the same. So here, with house number two, the Taurus house, I mean, obviously this is capable of endless elaboration. But the finances are there, and the personal resources, and the use of material resources, and the attitude in relation to money, and the losses resulting from wrong material values, or perhaps even the gains resulting from wrong material values. You can lose or gain whether your values are high or low. It just depends on your own moral character and on how successful you've been in the matter of handling things intelligently. So this is also considered psychologically to be a house of self-worth, of self-esteem. I mean, here is your possession. It's called the physical body. And what's it worth to you? And what's it worth to others? Your values are found here. A certain sense of security based upon prana or based upon money. Some of your qualities are found here. So some of this is pretty much the same. It will have a this house will have a relation to physicality and to the earth. It's one of the houses in which the earth is strong, I think. It's related to the throat center because Taurus rules the voice, but also to the Ajna center because the jewel in the forehead of the bull is commonly discussed. And related as well to the third eye. Perhaps a combination of the first house and the second house would include the third eye. There's always the eye symbolism when we deal with the Taurus, and when we deal with Taurus people, we oftentimes see, depending on the decanate, of course, quite a very full and rounded eye, the so-called cow's eyes. But from the esoteric and spiritual perspective, here is the storehouse of life energy. It is prana, as the Tibetans said, and our spiritual resources stored in our causal body. That which has been stored and can be used for higher purposes, and also one's higher values, well, values in general are found in this house, but the higher values are stored within the causal body, those energies which are found there because we have turned a desire into aspiration. I would also have to say that from a lower perspective, this is one's let's see, one's desires are here found. And from the higher point of view, one's aspirations are found. This is the desire body, the astral body, and esoterically, we have aspirations. And in general, the appearance of light or lighted forms. Under Vulcan, we control life energies, we control forms. There's a lot of will here. So do we grasp and shape matter as the expression of our values, especially spiritual values? So in a way, it's a creative house, of creativity, and some fourth ray will be found resonant with the activities of this house. Now we have the withdrawal of life energy from the forms. It sounds like death, but in a way it's choosing to energize inner forms and not choosing to continue to energize those forms which simply reside in the world of matter form and which are materially tending. Acquisition is a big theme. So here, gains, acquisitions in the lower or traditional area, but acquisition of spiritual values. After every life, there is a harvest. And what is harvested in the quarry? Well, you know, the acquisition of spiritual values, I would say, as gathered from the quarry. So here the mineral connotation is again seen. So, you know, minerals which are of value, and the greatest of the valuable minerals, of the valuable minerals, is the diamond of the diamond soul. So it's going to have a lot to do with the radiance of the jewel in the lotus. You know, I'm just kind of thinking along here. You know, one could write a whole book on the subject, and it probably has been. Whoops. I hope I didn't lose anything here. Okay. So this is the radiance of the diamond soul, and in general the desire body, but it's also the place where we clarify desires with light, clarification of desires with light. So this means we change our values. So there's always tests as to values going on in the second house of desires with light. Yes, okay. Well, as you see, I'm making a bit of a mess of the form here. that's because I want to add to the spiritual meaning. I would say also, you know, from the chakric perspective, the sacral center is important. What I want to do here is change this in the view, review the type of language I'm using, and set the proofing language and use English, because that's the way it seems to be. Yes, that is. So the sacral center is also found important here, and when one thinks of aspiration, The solar plexus center is connected also. These are chakras. They're not necessarily high centers, but they are chakras, and therefore we have somewhat the esoteric meaning when we speak of the chakras, because we're not strictly dealing with physical things. Well, there are ways in which this sign affects the form, but in generally we're dealing with the body as a possession. And I just want to I want to find a place to put that in. I could, you know, rearrange this: control of the form, shaping of matter, etc., etc. The body as a possession. And obviously the care of that body as it is a possession, and withdrawal of energy from forms, and let's call it this, disidentification from form, as the Buddha did. So the sense of being able to withdraw from form is strong here, and to see that the consciousness, wisely, that is, to see that the consciousness is not that form. So the letting go of form in favor of consciousness and wisdom is a higher correspondence in this house. If we go on to Gemini, we see that traditionally it means the rational mind, mental processes, communication through spoken and written word, the search for knowledge. That's also, I suppose, found in Taurus, you know, the acquisition of knowledge. I guess I cannot be utterly complete here, including the acquisition of knowledge. Well, that would normally be knowledge, so what has happened here? Let's see if I have succeeded in making this. No, I haven't. And I want to set this as a default. Yes, and it's okay. Now, knowledge will, 2Ks will give me knowledge. All right. Well, going, I guess the main outlines are the important things. You know, the search for knowledge, the process of relating with others, short journeys, brothers, sisters, what can I say? Letters, emails, missives, getting through to others by some medium or other. Now, I hope I've included telepathy when it comes to the higher type of meaning. So in general, communication, information gathering, sharing, Gemini is the sign associated, and of course, exoterically, it's Mercury. But what we could do, we could look for the higher meaning of the house. According to the esoteric ruler. So that would be an important link in this case, Venus. And so it would have a lot to do with communications with the soul, obviously. So the general psychological kind of descriptors, curiosity, open-mindedness, willingness to communicate, it rules the hands and the pranic vitality. It rules the center in the lungs. It rules the chakras in the hands. Let's put it like this, the chakras in the hands, and pranic vitality through the center in the lungs. There is a pranic center there. It's the highest, and it's maybe found in the lower part between the shoulder blades. low, I think. Low between the shoulder blades. Well, okay, what else from the esoteric point of view do we find? We find the general structure of the etheric body. We find the nadis and general lines of connection, energy lines, lines of connection. It is also related to manas and to the citta and mind substance, but then we could find that in the first house as well. The interconnecting, interconnectedness via prana, that's what I want to say in general. Interconnectedness via prana in the etheric body. Mental telepathy, yes, and maybe etheric telepathy also. Transmitting energy states without mental consciousness. So etheric telepathy, a mental transference of energy, okay. Unfoldment of the knowledge petals. Well, this would be something that I would get into when I would be discussing the egoic lotus in detail. I don't want to get too much into that because it's a voluminous subject in its own right. So, but unfoldment of the knowledge petals would be here, and it depends on what stage of evolution we're at, you know, because every tier has its own knowledge petal in general. It is indicating one's way of developing the rainbow bridge, the magnetic rapport between soul and personality. I'll put it right here. That particular process rules the process of establishing magnetic rapport between soul and personality. It's the way of developing the rainbow bridge, and what I put in purple above is really the relating of the higher and the lower selves and the communication between them. The communication between the higher and the lower selves. Not just horizontal communications, but communications with the solar angel, between the solar angel and its reflection or its shadow. Steps along the path, soul brothers and sisters. Now, you know, maybe I've left that out, but that really is, yes, brothers and sisters are here. And now something important, soul brothers and sisters, and the communication between people as souls, companions on the way. So communication between souls, members of one's group, members of one's group, I'm not sure what this means, but not the group as a, or, but not the group as a collective. Well, higher forms of communication, the lower Antikarana, but also the higher Antikarana. See, there are many ways to spiral this up. DK has basically said the other houses you can work out for yourself. And there are ways to do it by consulting the esoteric planets and their more concrete meanings. The higher correspondence to the material realities for which the house stands. And we see that these can be, yes, within the realm of personality, but they can also indicate things in the realm of the soul. Okay, going maybe a little farther. Let's see how we are here. Oh, yeah. We are in this particular... Right, okay. So we've said actually quite a bit about Gemini here. I'm not sure that we should say maybe the group as a collective is somewhat, it's the members of one's group, the actual people in it, but not the group as a collective, which is, I think I'll go back here. And, right, not the group as a collective, where is that? Right. Okay. Which is ruled by Aquarius. By Aquarius. Okay. Having a little trouble. It keeps on wanting to revert. Keeps on wanting to revert to... Okay. Now maybe this is too small. I'm not sure. It might be a little bit small. We could see whether we should expand it just a bit. Yeah, we can do it that way. Okay. Well, there's quite a bit said here about the esoteric meaning of the third house. If you have planets in the third house, it may tell you something about the condition within your etheric body. Planets in the second house will have a lot to do with the desire body. Planets in the first house, perhaps with the mental body. We have to let the intuition be our guide. I think we have time to discuss in this 1 hour program the sign Cancer and its relationship to the fourth house. So the traditional is the biological inheritance. You see a lot of people who have inherited diseases with indicators here in the fourth house, the mother and immediate family, but we cannot say that the father should be excluded, okay? Sometimes, whoa, what is this? Okay. Oh, we have something really strange going on here. Sorry. All right. We'll try, yes, I know what to do here. I think I saw the reason. Okay, so now if this fails, I'll just have to start all over again. The father can also be indicated. Now, traditionally, well, I'm not sure that the psychological foundations are part of the traditional. That's more a psychological interpretation. But the endings and what is tradition... traditional is the end of life. And of course, the most traditional factor is houses, lands, and mines. So let me look at it this way. Houses, lands, and mines. And what I've seen here is that somehow we seem to have... let's see if we've done this correctly. I think what I've done is this should be put here in this one. Yes, that will be better. All right. All right, so we are looking here at the fourth house. So houses, lands, and mines are the traditional and most concrete meaning. I was saying the father can be also indicated, the early home environment, the end of life, refuge, the mother country, patriotism, the lunar elementals in the fourth house. But I think that that is more an esoteric meaning. So let's put that over here. Or at least it has to do with the parts of life which are hidden. So home, personal roots, unconscious, emotional, intuitive underpinnings of the personality. It's lunar. It has to do with the past. House of the past. Domestic life. Some of this I think I may not have written in the second column. The hero and the shadow. Not sure about that. So we have here the breast and the solar plexus, and I think these are breast centers. And of course, we have the particular organs of the body, you know. In the case of Gemini, we have the hands and so forth. I just want to make sure that all of this okay. The psychological aspect, self-understanding of one's roots, old patterns of behavior, the moon represents that. The environment in which one is raised in the home, and all of those patterns concern. But now, from the more esoteric perspective, the biological karma inherited from family and the genes, the female principle in general, the group soul, from whom come our soul brothers and sisters. At least it is associated in a way with the lesser ashram. Foundations of the soul. It's anchoring in present incarnation. So the method of anchoring the soul, manifesting it. Okay, let's get this out, and we'll say here, the method of anchoring the soul. Right. Okay. The foundation for the building of self-consciousness, which goes on in the next house particularly, karmic conclusions to life and circumstances. And what I've added to this recently, the ashram of the master, either the lesser ashram or the greater ashram, the true spiritual home of the disciple, the master as in a way, a parent, because the parents are indicated here, either the mother or the father. In general, this first house, from an exoteric point of view, has to do with security. And here I'm talking about one's spiritual security. This is the home of the guru, and the guru is the home. And the lunar elementals are here found. There is some connection, I think, with the astral plane, but also with the via Neptune. So let's just say connection with the astral plane via Neptune, but also with the dense physical plane via the moon. Okay, let's see about this. Okay, via the moon. Now I'm understanding. I'm fighting with the form here, as you can probably see. And this has been contributed to at different times. So there is the whole idea of spiritual security, and I want to add something here called spiritual refuge, so that when we're told that we take refuge in the Buddha, or someone takes refuge in the Buddha or in the Dharma, This is the place where the refuge is taken. And there's the whole idea of, these are not in order, of course, but spiritual guardianship. Looking after those who are needing spiritual care and culture. So who are the members of one's family? Well, you can be a member of a family and the guru can look after you, but you can also take the role of the parent or guardian, and you can find a way to look after those who are in your spiritual care. So we're spiraling up the meaning here as best we can. I think that this chart is somewhat of a collection of things that other people have said, including the Tibetan. But I think what we need here is simply to work with analogical thinking and find a way to find the higher correspondence to anything that we may see as concrete. In other words, the rational mind has a higher correspondence of the intuitive mind. So as well here in Gemini, we can say that this is, for some, the place of the intuitive mind mediated through the Antikarana. There's just so many things that can be said here as we expand the concrete ideas. So, once again, from the Tibetan particularly, we have his way of expanding this. It's very clear. First house physical body or form, then the causal body. Appearance of or manifestation, or the appearance or emergence of the soul via the rising sign, the head of the brain or the head center. And there's a lot of complexity in that head center, just as there is in the brain. Personal activity or soul activity, soul expression. And I want to add here, well, I probably already did, personal identity and soul identity. Mannerisms and things which distinguish the individual, and ray types and qualities which distinguish the individual. In the second house, finances, monetary interchange, and quite simply prana, expenditures, where you spend your substance, generally the use of energy, the flowing golden substance, possessions, or control of the form. The form is our possession. Our whole personality, really, is our possession. So from a certain point of view, the entire personality is found here as the lowest of the periodical vehicles. Losses, withdrawal from matter, learning how to disidentify from that which desire had adhered to. So changing one's desires and disidentifying from one's attachments. So the place that we may find ourselves attached, suppose we have the moon in that second house and maybe in some sticky sign, like Cancer, let's say. It can show attachments, and when we have Pluto aspects or Uranus aspects, detachment can come. Gains, later the acquisition of spiritual powers and spiritual values. I think we see how it works. And just one last little look at what we have gathered together here. And I think we will continue with this at our next session. We can't cover all aspects of it, no, but we can understand some of the higher spirals. We'll have to go through every house, and I think the most important thing, you know, from the esoteric point of view, is to look at the first four houses as the mind, first house, desire body, second house, etheric body, third house, although also connected with the mind, and the dense physical body. So from the esoteric point of view, and from the point of view of the centers, let's say this is the dense physical body. or that which is not a principle. And we can also look at this as, I'm just thinking of other things, inheritances. Okay. Wow, that happened all at once. Yes, oh, I see what happened here. All right. We'll get this back. Right. Inheritances. Mm-hmm. I have too many things going on. Inheritances from oneself, not just from one's parents. So it's like what one brings over of the condition of the personality vehicles as a whole. This is not the what we have in the causal body so much. It's more the inherited personality condition. Now, the general physical condition of inheritance is also indicated here. But if we have worked on something and if we have built the personality to a certain point, it should be registered in the condition of our personality. In other words, we inherit from ourselves. Well, okay, I didn't know that I'd be getting into this so quickly, but we have 8 more to go, and that should take our next program pretty well. So, I think what's important is to understand the way this is done, and to have a certain flexibility of mind so that when we read the houses of an astrological chart, we do not only think in material terms, but we think in terms of the higher meanings in the personality, spiritual meanings, and we think in terms of energy and chakras, and not just of condensations, dense condensations of energy. So, you know, I'm thinking about a house, and I really should add here, there's so many things that have come in. Let's call it auric fields, or the vehicles of the personality. These vehicles are homes, are they not? So the physical body is a home, but also all the other vehicles collected as a home. Well, I keep on coming up with new ideas here, but I think what I'll do, since it's late here, is sign off for the moment and come back to this when I can. Okay, we'll see you soon. This is how can I put this so that it really works? I'm really fighting the form here. Let's call this the... Okay, I see what to do. We'll call this the end of esoteric astrology adventure. Number 128A. Okay. End of esoteric astrology adventure 128A. And this is not a page. We're still on an earlier page because we had to take a little branching off here to develop these houses or work them out for ourselves, as it were. So we're on page 511, page 511, okay. Then beginning with esoteric astrology adventure, which will be 129A, page 511. All right, a little bit of a struggle here with an unwieldy document, but we will manage. And here, of course, you can obviously freeze the screen and study the tabulation for yourself, you know. But I keep on adding to the tabulation, of course, and therefore, in this purple, it keeps on being enriched. So we will begin with the Leo house next time, the fifth house. Now, we have spiraled even the first house upward, even though it's one of the mundane houses. It can really have a lot to do with our essential identity. So even though some of the houses are exoteric and mundanely oriented, they do have, some of them, quite higher correspondences. Okay, friends, we'll see you at the next occasion, whenever that may be. Hopefully quite soon. See you then.